bring you the storyline. And if you like my story, fine. But ain't none of the glory mine. See, my life was a lonely one. And I was dear mama's only son. With no idea what I'm gonna become. And I didn't have long to know that you don't have to be grown to go. I could have died so long before. Then I finally saw the sign. And I made it on down the line. One step at a time. I feel better.
All right, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are listening to me in the known universe. Again, we want to thank you for joining us for the first edition of Synergy. For your listening pleasure, again, this is a show that will infuse philosophy, psychology, consciousness, spirituality, health and wellness, and everything else in between. I am one of your co-hosts, Keelan Hinton. Again, I'm joined by my other esteemed co-host. He'll introduce himself.
Good morning, evening, afternoon, everybody. This is Joe Hill with the Professor Keelan Hinton. What we want to do together is just bring the rest of whoever else wants to listen into conversations we're always having about these different ways of approaching life that Keelan mentioned: psychology, spirituality, religion, consciousness, and how these things actually can, should apply, be integrated into just the living of life. We have conversations all the time about the ways that people sometimes navigate life without thinking, without awareness, reactively, and thinking about how could any of us, or preferably all of us together, begin to move through life, deal with one another in ways that are more mindful, not more careful in terms of caution, but more full of care, more caring, where engaging with one another, learning from one another, and growing out of the experiences of doing life together, to see what possibility that could really have for folks as we try to work life out, not on our own, but in the fact we're always dealing with other people, whether we mean to or want to or not. We're kind of bound in relationship, because none of us actually walks through this world alone. So we're always having these conversations. So we thought it might be nice to invite other folks into the conversation to reflect with us, to respond to us, to again do what we're talking about, grow together, think together, learn together. So here we are.
Yeah, and again, for me, I think that what makes this so very different from other shows and other experiences is, while we're interested in community, social issues, psychological issues, I think a part of what makes this so very different is the focus and emphasis that we place on consciousness, spirituality, and how consciousness and how spirituality and whatever that is, because we first and foremost have to sort of figure out what does that mean when we say consciousness. Yeah. And what is spirituality and what is consciousness, and how does it inform how we think about the world and how we interact with each other? That's sort of one of the main of a myriad of components, but that's sort of the main component that a lot of our conversations are based around, and what we're interested in, this idea of what is consciousness, what is spirituality. How do they inform the self? How do they inform how we think about ourselves, how we think about each other, and how we interact in the world? And I think that that is something, that being the focus, I think that that is something that will make this podcast, this show, and these recordings a little bit different from other shows that you may hear that just focus on social issues or health issues or health and wellness issues. We thought it would be dope, and we thought it would be interesting to sort of focus on, again, trying to figure out what is consciousness, what is spirituality, and again, how these things shape and mold who we are. Okay.
Yeah.
So, this first show, hopefully, is just sort of giving you an introduction into who we are, how we think about the world, what our perspectives on consciousness and spirituality are, and just bits and pieces of how we think they shape and mold us as men, as fathers, as friends, as community members, and how that, you know, and I think it's probably a good idea to let you know something about us so you'll know how we approach a lot of topics. In regards to the podcast and show, we have a lot of really, really good ideas planned. Some book writers, panelists, for those that may be interested, we'll start a Facebook page as well as a means of contacting and communicating with us. So if you're interested in panels, coming on for discussions, interviews, book writers, things of that nature. So it won't solely just be us talking, but a lot of topics and a lot of issues that arise, we plan on definitely mixing it up, and hopefully doing some things that listeners will enjoy. Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's important to state, you know, we don't mean to suggest to anybody that, oh, we're going to have all the answers to the universe here. It's really not about that. It's more about the journey of thought, the journey of conversation, offering perspectives that as you offer perspectives, there are things that we find as we're going back and forth that do ring true on some level, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. And so we figure it's worth sharing, and not just to share or tell folks listening, here's how things are, but to say, here's a conversation, here's how we're seeing things, here's how we're experiencing things, and join that conversation. So it's an offering of the conversation, not just to like passively receive it, but to engage with us, to respond back, to touch on things you want to talk about, to hear folks you want to hear from. So we'll introduce ideas, we'll journey into some concepts and things, you know, as we're talking, that we hope that you will engage with. We don't necessarily need you to take what we offer and say, okay, well, that's the truth, I'm going to live that. Well, you know, talk to us, because we're folks like everybody else out there. We're just trying to figure it out and trying to talk about what we think we're figuring out. So welcome to the conversation.
And I think the most important part to remember is that we may have topics and ideas that we're interested in, but nothing is ever really scripted,
yeah,
or written out. Like a part of when we talk about finding truth, there's some areas of life that the process has to be organic,
yeah,
and it has to be in the moment. So and I've said this before online, like what may sound or appear as contradictions really may not be us contradicting ourselves or previous ideas we made, in so much as like thought and knowledge and discovery is always evolving.
Right.
Like we're always constantly evolving in the moment as we speak about things.
Yeah.
In the moment, we're developing different perspective, especially bouncing ideas off of each other. So I think that is one of the most important things. Is, and especially for me, and I think that's, and I don't want to speak for you, but especially for me, like just the creative, when I am trying to be in a creative space, or when I am in a creative space, that process has to be organic for me. I can't use, yeah, PowerPoints. I can't,
right.
I can't use outlines. Yeah. I mean, I have a skeleton of sort of what I want to, what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Like I've been teaching almost 20 years and I've never taken notes.
Right.
I just have an idea of what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
You know, I have an idea of what attachment is. I have, right, a definition. And then just when I get up, whatever, yeah, comes out, which is not always a good, which is always well, a good, always a good thing.
Well, it's true. But I think there's a lot to be said for, and I think our modern society is so structured. And structure is so valued that the idea of something being organic sometimes gets dismissed as not prepared for or disorganized. But the idea is that, again, teaching 20 years, there's this whole backlog of knowledge that even, yeah, though you're in the moment working organically, you're not winging it. You have a whole life of education and experience that's informing your conversation.
Yeah.
And so for me, the organic part of it is the work of giving yourself room creatively to reference all of that to make some synthesis of everything you have in you and to articulate something, hopefully, that may not be new or groundbreaking, but that conveys all of this stuff,
yeah,
all of this experience, all of this knowledge, to offer something that may not be new, but that may offer it in a way that someone can go, I got that.
Yeah.
Or if I can bring the most important things out of the last 5 years of my experience and distill that into something to offer you,
yeah,
okay. And if it's not organic, I've worked it out ahead of time by myself. So whatever I'm working out will make sense to me,
yeah,
because it's just me in my head. But if my purpose is to get to you, whether it's Keelan as a teacher or me preaching or speaking or teaching something, if my purpose is to get to you, I've got to engage with you and then make reference to you as I deal with all of the backlog of information in my head.
Yeah.
And that has to happen in the moment. We could come on every week with something we scripted out in our own heads of like, this works for me, this is true. But the whole point of conversation is the recognition that truth arrived at alone is almost inherently flawed.
Yeah.
Truth arrived at in a bubble, in a box, that does not take the larger experience of life that's happening in other lives into account is always going to be incomplete,
yeah,
at best. And potentially flawed and damaging,
yeah,
at worst, because I've got my truth. I've got things figured out. But, you know, that may work in the context you have worked out your life experiment in by yourself.
Yeah.
But there are countless other life experiments happening around you that may not bear out the same results.
Yeah.
And it's not about contradiction. It's about saying, here's new information I need to process into my larger thinking, my larger cognitive map, if you will. I'm trying to borrow some of Keenan's words. But
why is that style of presentation, I think feared is not the right word
I'm looking for.
Like, people either love us or hate us.
Yeah.
and it, because it's so drastically different, that style of thinking,
oh, yeah,
and style of teaching, style of presentation is so drastically different from what people are used to.
Yeah.
And I, like, people either, they either get it or they don't. Like, they're like,
yeah,
I don't like this, or they're like, wow, this is so drastically different.
Yeah.
It's refreshing.
Right.
Or is it just simply because it's something that people aren't used to? Or...
I think it's two things. I think one is, often, as I mentioned, people who talk about being organic, sometimes they are in fact winging it.
Yeah.
Which gives it kind of a bad rap. There's a very great difference between getting up, like to get up and say you're unprepared, like in the setting you're talking about, is entirely inaccurate, because again, whatever it is you plan to teach to your class, you may not have written things down, but you've been thinking well in advance, what do we need to touch on? What do I need them to come away with? And in the midst of that, aware or unaware, all of your education and training comes to bear in your thought processes.
Yeah.
All of the information and content informs whatever you're going to try and offer.
Yeah.
For example, you could say as a sculptor, I don't know what I'm going to make, I'm a wing it, so you just go to the wheel. But if there ain't no clay on the wheel, you can wing it all day. You're not making nothing.
Yeah.
But you have this raw material of your education, of your experience, that you then try to shape into something that is that reaches people. That's what art tries to do.
Yeah.
And so to think about presentation as an art instead of an academic, you know, rigid process, some folks don't do that well.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is it can be scary because ours is a world that prizes control.
Yeah.
And the idea that I will come into this thing, I need to have all the metrics and unpredictabilities weeded out. So I'm going to write down everything I'm going to say and present, and that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to leave. But I can do that and feel I've done a good job because nothing out of my control happened, and not teach anybody.
Yeah.
Or in the midst of teaching or presenting something, some folks don't let questions even get asked.
Yeah.
But a question may get asked that rubs up against what, and again, in your head and your preparation, you knew was just perfect, right, and good. And if you're not prepared to move outside of your own lane because you structured this whole thing, the question either gets dismissed or you get off your game or any number of things happens.
I wonder how much, because of the current cultural climate we live in, how much of this is people being afraid?
I mean,
as in presenters and speakers being afraid because I don't want to say the wrong thing.
Absolutely. Because all that.
And that's the thing when, and it's something that if anyone ever listens to this, I think it's important to understand that when thought is organic, I heard somebody say years ago, and I never forgot it, if you speak for a living, eventually you're going to say something stupid.
Mm. Yeah.
It's invariably, it is going to happen. If you speak for a living, and some of what you do is extemporaneous, and it comes from, you will say something dumb at some point or another. And I think now, before there was more leeway, there used to be sort of leeway to make mistakes, and you didn't lose your life.
Right.
You didn't lose your livelihood.
Or your livelihood,
And now...
Now you make an error, like, oh, you're just the villain of the world. You could have contributed umpteen years of thoughtful dialogue to the world of thought and spirituality and philosophy. You get one thing wrong, it's, oh, let's hang them.
You get one
thing. I just said hang them. That's insensitive. See, I'm in trouble. It's the first show. I'm in trouble.
you say one thing wrong, you offend the right person, you offend the wrong person.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, and I wonder if
they get some traction on social media. You shot.
And I think I wonder again if how valued is, here we go, like just how valued is free thinking, how valued is organic thinking, as a society, do we want, I know this sound, you know me though, you know I'm a conspiracy theorist, is a society, do we want free thinkers and organic thought, or do we want people to shut up and dribble?
Okay, we're getting off the main topic of our theme, but I think that's fine. That's the point of the show, because my question is going to maybe take us somewhere. We don't have to exhaustively explore, but the answer to your question would be, for me, a second question. How does our primary and secondary education system work?
Okay.
I tell you what I want you to know to pass the class. You hand it back to me.
Yeah.
You fill in the bubbles. Even if there is essay questions, I expect in the essay questions, you will stay within the lines of what I told you already. And you will get an A. You will be rewarded for that. We talk about free thinking. All, you know, business models, business magazines, think out of the box, need free thinkers. But there's still this tether to a status quo.
Yeah.
And if you just want free thinking to make the status quo better, that's not really free thinking. You're still stuck in the box.
Yeah.
So I think as a society, we've been taught this is a value that we're supposed to echo. Yeah. But when it comes down to it, as long as your free thought doesn't rock my boat, that's cool.
Yeah.
But as I think about especially our education system, the withering support of the arts, the drive toward something that is of utility for the workforce or whatever it may be, even if it's vocational, shut up and dribble is a necessary part of our current economic system. I'm not bashing the economic system, but I get in trouble again. I don't mean to do that, but the fact of the matter is the system relies on a countless mass of employees shutting up and dribbling.
Yeah.
And even when you pay some of those folks higher up to be that free creative thinker, it's still in service to this goal of growth or progress that's still stuck in a status quo kind of system. So
yeah,
not really. That was a long way to get to not really.
Yeah. But that's what we're here for.
Well, when you look at some of these dynamics in our society, it's not a whole lot of room for it. It's a nice academic exercise and people love to read about it. But then I go back to dribbling. I read about it before I go to bed or on my break at work. But when the break is over, when I wake up to go to work in the morning, I'm going to shut up and dribble some more.
Yeah. So
I think there is a fear of it. I think it's not controlled.
Yeah.
It sometimes is a place of discomfort. And if you're the one on the journey, you should, if you're doing it well, find yourself in a space of experience and learning in which there are multiple moments in which you don't know.
Yeah.
I don't have this whole thing figured out. I'm moving into a space of thought about something that has not been mapped out already.
Yeah.
And so put yourself, you're from Georgia?
Memphis.
Tennessee, Memphis. Yeah. Memphis, Tennessee. I'm from West Virginia. We both can relate to being on the wrong road at night where there are no street lights and you can't see what's in front of you.
Yeah.
And some folks would just say, well, I could go explore that and see what's down that road.
Yeah.
But something back in my mind says, just go back to the road you know that's mapped out, that's pre-lit.
Yeah.
And just shut up and dribble or just keep driving to get where you're going on the road folks have already laid out for you.
Now, I think this is a good place to segue. So a larger part, I think, of what we always in all of our conversations go back to, we always go back to spirituality and we always go back to something called consciousness.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be a good place to sort of talk about what is consciousness.
Yeah.
And most importantly, who decides to explore? And who decides, does your level of consciousness or does your consciousness, whatever that is, which is what we have to figure out in a second, does your consciousness determine who continues on into the unknown and who turns around?
Yeah.
And maybe it doesn't. But first, in your opinion, what is consciousness?
Yeah.
And then I'll tell you what I think maybe consciousness is. And then from there, what's most important, I think, is, again, when we're faced with situations that go against the grain of who we are, when we're faced with situations that go against the grain of what we know, or when we're faced with an unknown, does consciousness in some way, shape, form, or fashion influence who decides to test their beliefs, who decides to keep going into the unknown, and who decides to turn around? You see what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But first, what is consciousness a thing? What is that? What does that mean?
Okay. So here's the trick. We got to answer that question and not get so tied up on it we forget the second question, because I think the second question matters so much. And the whole point of the show is defining consciousness, spirituality, religion, whatever things we talk about, is less important in and of itself than what the second question suggests is, what does it mean for my life?
Yeah,
that's the whole point. But let's sit on consciousness for a minute. To me, consciousness, and again, this may have some contradictory things because we'll talk some things through and see what rings true. But to me, consciousness is in the most basic sense, self-awareness.
That's the exact word that I was going to use.
That's why he made me go first. So
that's the exact word I was going to use. I just interchanged consciousness with the word awareness.
Yeah. But even that is a loaded thing, because I think we tend to go, I'm self-aware, which means I'm, I don't know if we'll still stay woke or not. I'm 44. I don't keep up on these words, but we think of it in a positive way, kind of this empowered, self-differentiated, I recognize myself separate from, the masses or whatever. But consciousness, self-awareness, here's the snag that makes your brain hurt. To say you're self-aware, there are so many things that influence our sense and understanding of who that self is.
Yeah.
And there can be so many things that we are not even aware of influencing who our sense of self is.
Yeah.
There could be something that your parent or a complete stranger said to you when you were 8 years old that may still be drilling a hole in your understanding of yourself, or propelling your sense of self.
We used the word a while back, that M word, metacognition.
Yeah.
Thinking about what I'm thinking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it may not even be having an in-depth and deep understanding of my thoughts.
Yeah.
But the fact that I am aware of what I am thinking and what I am feeling, while it may seem like common sense, But in actuality, it's not. There's so many of us who are just in this world, just living and breathing,
just living,
and acting and reacting and responding. And I wonder if, what do you think? Like, are there levels to that awareness?
Definitely. You know, in the most basic sense, self-awareness just goes back to I think, therefore I am. I mean, I'm aware that I'm here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's one thing. but who do you understand yourself to be is a whole different thing. And that is a whole long, that I think is a lifelong journey. You know, it picks up, and you may word this better than me, that idea of like the Johari window.
Yeah.
That there's this part of yourself that you see most clearly that others don't see. There's a part of yourself that others see more clearly than you see yourself.
Yeah.
I forget the third window because it's the fourth window that hangs me up. What's the third one? I forget. I see myself more clearly than you see me, and then you see things about me.
You see things about me that I don't see about myself.
Right.
I can't think. Like, I haven't read that in a while.
It's the fourth one that trips me up because there's this other window where neither you or I see some certain aspect of myself or my motivations clearly. And this isn't a fixed thing. I think that's where we get stuck too, these fixed understandings.
Yeah.
Because that may seem like bull to somebody. I don't know myself. Well, let's take you back to 3 years old. You didn't know yourself the way you know yourself now. So is it so impossible to think that in another 40 years you won't understand yourself, or I won't understand myself better than I do right now, that you look back and go, oh, I see how a certain thing drove what I was doing that I didn't see at the time.
Yeah.
So all these kind of things. So I think that is the place that a practice of self-awareness takes you to again and again, to acknowledge for yourself, I'm self-aware, I'm conscious. And yet, if I'm wise enough about that, I have to recognize that I'm conscious enough about myself to know there's still stuff about myself that I've not even figured out yet.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the place you get to that I think can be distressing, scary, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Or that can free you up, because that also means I'm not bound by, like, if who I understand myself to be right now is all I am and all I'm ever going to be, well, that to me, that's kind of limiting. I'm, you know, thinking in terms of biology, I'm dead.
yeah.
But there's still something I may yet become, still something about myself I still get to learn. You know, that's exciting to me, but I think that's scary to some people.
I think what's exciting to me is us trying to tease apart the idea of when I evolve to a space and a place that I realize there's so many things that I don't know. Like, for me, that's when I started to feel like I was starting to be freed, and I started to feel liberated when I finally started to realize that I do not have I don't have this together. There's so many things that I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, what do they say? I'm smart enough to know the things that that I don't know. And for me, that was liberating, because it put me on this path to want to seek and find.
Yeah.
But the question is, again, the ultimate question we're trying to figure out is, what is it that differentiates people like me and you?
Yeah.
That it doesn't scare us to not know. And not only does it scare us to not know, we're not afraid of the idea of how truly dumb we could be.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, that doesn't in any way, shape, form, or fashion scare us in any way, but it motivates us to seek and to find.
Well, one thing that I think of with that is, and you have to be able to arrive at this, a lot of this comes into upbringing, and not just who your parents were. You're talking about living years of life with countless external influences shaping your understanding about everything.
Yeah.
Parents, grandparents, family, media, you know, education system, random things that just happen to you as you engage with other people. All these things kind of shape and influence who we are and teach you, or you learn out of those how you are going to choose to navigate the world. For some folks, what they learn is I've got to figure all this out. or I've got to work myself in life in a manageable box.
Yeah,
that will get me through. maybe I hole up in this cave, and it's just a cave, and it's dark, but I can figure my way around. And once I figure my way around in this cave, I'm the master of my universe.
Yeah.
Now I can go out there back into the light. That's a big, huge world. I can't figure out. Now it's too darn bright. I can't see anything. So to compare that experience, it's very much the same thing. If you can get to that point of recognizing there's this whole other world of knowledge, even within myself, this whole other world of things I can discover about myself.
Yeah.
I can go, wow, that's exciting, and wander into it. Or I can say that, whoa, I'm gonna stay in my cave. And a lot of folks stay there. Yeah. And I don't mean the cave to feel like a negative thing, but it's what some folks choose to do. But to arrive at this point where I can say, I don't have it all figured out, I don't know anything, and either to panic, wow. Or to say, and I don't take credit for arriving at this by myself, it just so happens these are the influences of life that I've had, or we can call it a moment of clarity, or this may be where spirituality begins to come in. I arrive at a point where I can also say, I don't know everything. I don't have to.
You know, I
don't have to. But here's where I'm in this moment right now. And then consciousness, spirituality, I think, comes in when you decide to say, I can figure it all out. Or in the moment I'm in, what do I have the capacity to impact?
Let me say this. I wonder, do we feel that way? We aren't intimidated by change. We aren't intimidated by knowing and not knowing. We aren't intimidated by challenge only because somewhere in our heads, we think that we have something, either consciously or subconsciously.
Yeah.
We feel like we have something to help us negotiate anything that we come along.
Yeah, yeah. And
I wonder if that is the key. I can remember like an old definition of stress. Stress is any time you come upon a situation that you either consciously or subconsciously feel like you don't have the tools to handle.
Hmm.
The only time you get stressed out is when something is happening that you feel like maybe I don't have the tools to deal with this.
Well, yeah, otherwise you wouldn't be stressed. You just handle it.
Otherwise you just deal with it. Yeah. So I wonder if that's the key. Where are you at that particular, what tools do you have at that particular point in your life that when you come across that when you come to that crossroads,
right.
You know what I'm saying, of the road is dark, do I want to explore, do I just want to go back? If you feel like, well, I got a flashlight in my pocket, you got something in your tool pack to help you through the darkness.
Right.
You don't worry as much. It's not just that you don't worry, but you don't worry in the same way that somebody that has nothing in their tool pack at all.
Right.
Two-pack, you know, metaphorically just being emotional and mental and psychological tools that you have.
Right, right.
And maybe it's because over the years we've developed and we've acquired all of these tools.
Yeah.
And the tools that we have might be bum tools. They might not even work. But in our head, I got some stuff that I can try.
Right. I got something I can try.
And some people don't even feel like they got stuff that they can even try to help them through the darkness.
Right.
And maybe that, when they see it getting dark, they look in their tool pack, they don't have anything, and they instantly want to turn around.
Yeah. Because I can't do that.
Yeah.
Is what you get locked into. It's not even just even going as far as stopping to assess, what tools do I have to work with? I can't. Once you've said I can't, well, yeah, you may as well turn around.
Yeah.
But if you go, well, maybe I can, at least a maybe. And maybe in addition to having the tools, and I may say, these might be bum tools, I might jack this whole thing up. I may walk down this road and stumble and fall off a cliff. But I might not.
Yeah.
But I think to be less dramatic as we deal with things in life, I think it's very helpful to have for yourself a permission to fail.
Yeah.
A permission to try whatever it is and have permission to do it poorly so you can figure out how to do it well. But if you have to start with, I must be able to do this well as soon as I undertake it, well, then you decide on the front end if I'm going to try or not. And often you just decide not to try.
How do you give yourself permission to fail?
I don't know.
Can't it, be. It, I do. You can't be worried about what everybody else thinking about you.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah.
I wonder how much of that, shackles and hinders all of us.
Oh man, it's huge.
Because so and so will think I'm a failure.
Yeah.
So and so will think I'm a loser.
I'm a look bad or so and so. Not even a specific person. You may just have this abstract sense of I will to whoever.
Yeah.
Look like a failure. I think living enough life to realize a lot of folks fail helps.
Yeah.
And then now this takes us somewhere else completely different. I'm not sure where this will take us, but let me say this. This is what I'm talking about. I'm going to say it poorly because I don't know if I can say it well. I'll say it poorly. We'll work it out. But at some point, just not caring what that other person thinks.
Yeah.
Because whatever you do or don't think, I got to go to bed with me at night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to arrive at a point where you don't care what someone else's opinion is of what you're doing, you know, that's how do you get there? I don't really know.
How did I
arrive there? I guess we could track it back, but that'd be like, you know, I'd have to sit on the couch and work that session out for myself.
I think that, and this is probably just for future shows, but I think that we are, as a society, we are outcome,
yes,
based driven.
Absolutely, yes.
All we understand are results. Like, yeah. Nobody cares how you feel. Mm-mm. Nobody cares about what you think. What can you produce?
Yeah.
What are you producing? What can you produce? What is the outcome? You know,
yeah.
And something I try to tell my kids all the time was, I don't care about your grades. Well, yeah. That's a lie, obviously, but I don't care about your grades. I care about the effort that you give me. If you give the right effort, the grades will take care of themselves.
Yeah.
But I care that you have the right tools available and that you give the proper effort in anything that you do. And I think that when people learn, when you evolve, and I think that's an interesting word that we'll have to discuss it at some point, too, later on down the line.
Yeah.
This idea of evolving from a consciousness perspective, evolving from a spiritual perspective, when you evolve to a point that you're more concerned with the process.
Yeah.
As opposed to just the outcome.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I think at some point we realize that a perfected process or a good process will yield good outcomes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But when we're concerned with, I did my best.
Right.
I gave a best effort. I gave a good effort.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And we enjoy the process of seeking and finding.
Right.
Then I think all the rest of that other noise, you don't hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not necessarily worried about outcomes. But I think, again, it's hard when you're living, when you're immersed in an environment and immersed in a context, and we're immersed in a society that is so outcome driven.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I say, I mean, cut you off, but I teach an adult development class. We was talking about work and workplace.
Yeah.
Somebody asked, we was talking about jobs. Said, what's the most important job? They asked me what I think was the most important job.
Yeah.
I said, I think number one on my list for the first and most important job is a housewife.
Huh.
And second is a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, somebody was obviously like, they don't make no money.
Right.
And I said, well, two, I said, teachers are second to me because no matter who you are, who you become, everybody got to go through a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. Multiple teachers. Yeah.
Everybody. So teachers are in a space and a place to influence everybody. Everybody has to go through a teacher. And
yeah.
I said, two, I said, a housewife, like housewives sustain life.
Yeah.
Like nobody can, like nobody at the house.
Yeah.
I said, if housewives go on strike right now,
yeah,
the world will shut down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So everybody need to go home and kiss their mama, kiss their daddy, or whoever is helping keep.
Right.
Not specifically a housewife, but just whoever is
homemakers.
But because it doesn't make money, because they looked at me like, you just old. It's like they call me whack. You know what I'm saying? Everybody got an F that day. Like, but I'm like, they call me whack, and it's because like, at the end of the day, for them, it's about making money.
Well, here's the thing, though. I gotta make money. I got what? I gotta go to work. I gotta wear clothes to work. I gotta eat before I go to work. I gotta eat when I go home. When I'm at work, if home is stressed out and in disorder, that affects how I do or don't work well when I'm at work. So they don't realize that yet because they're still in college. They're not living this thing out yet. Yeah. I think it would be interesting to hear homemakers redefine what they do as saying, what do you do? I keep life in order.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
That could be a hard job. I mean, you can say, oh, it's demeaning to say they just cook and clean. Everybody got to eat. Everybody got to wear clothes. But you're also the one that if something goes down with someone in the family that's not at the house right now, who has to respond to that need.
Yeah.
You're also the person that represents, when folks come home, a sense of peace, a sense of sanity that the workplace don't rarely gives you. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot more to it. And so they don't understand that yet.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have understood it when I was their age. The most important job, yes, is the outcome-based job that gets me prestige, gets me money. But here are all these folks that literally shape human beings, the homemaker, the teacher, the folks that have all of this early, almost constant contact and influence over these lives that are eventually going to be adults.
Yeah.
And that will make or break them.
Yeah.
In infinite different ways. So, yeah, I think absolutely those are definitely the most important. All right, folks, we're back, and we want to pick up a thread that we touched on in the first section as we talked through the idea of some of the theme as far as free thought, organic thought, and seeing where that takes us. We kind of moved into a conversation about consciousness, which took us to a place of thinking about self-awareness, that kind of deeper sense of self-awareness we tend to think of when we talk about self-awareness, where we move beyond just worrying about what other folks are thinking, worrying about outcomes, getting a sense of oneself that is beyond just the external inputs we get from the world we're living in. And so as far as how you arrive at some sense of self or some alternative source of understanding about yourself, that seems like a good place to segue to spirituality. Spirituality, and again, we're not saying these are the definitions. This is just our understanding, and we'll go back and forth on this a little bit before we round out the show. But spirituality, to me, represents a point of reference for a person that comes from a recognition that there is something more than just these immediately visible things we see and things we hear, and that there's something else to the universe, some would say. There's something else, something more to me than just what everybody else is telling me, which is seems like an abstract notion, but we see it play out historically. Women's rights comes about out of a societal structure that in every way would have told a woman that what you currently are is all you're supposed to be. In fact, you're doing a good job as a woman if you just stay in this lane and do the things that society tells you to be. And yet and still some woman somewhere goes, yeah, but I'm feeling something different. I'm feeling some other possibility. I'm looking at the injustices that staying in this mode of life sometimes put upon us as women. But I guess that's okay. But no, it's not. There's something else that's supposed to be here. Through the course of slavery, you have slave masters and sometimes other institutions like, you know, even the church at times is telling a whole race of people in America that what you are is what you're supposed to be. And yet there are folks in that group that apparently, based on the fact they begin to pursue their freedom, that says, there's something else. So spirituality, most vaguely, is this something else. I think in a lot of our recovery programs, they call it that moment of clarity, that here I am in this life of addiction, of maybe shame and regrets, and still I get this clue in my own head, my own heart, my own spirit, that there's something else, some other possibility for who I could be. And so spirituality, most vaguely, I think, is that something else, that moment of clarity. Where does it come from? Is it just a synthesis of all the stuff, or is it really just a something else? And that can be defined in any number of ways by any number of people. But there's this something else that helps consciousness get from just an awareness of myself according to what everybody tells me to, there's something else to me. There's something more to me. Life tells me to be this, and then I go, yeah, but do I have to?
Yeah.
Where does that come from? What gives you the moment to question everything life has already told you about who you are? And I think that's where the drive comes from when we talk about not being afraid to fail or not being afraid to not know what's coming next, is because there's a sense that there is a something next. There's something out there. And that whether I fail or not, it's not that I don't care about anything, but my point of reference for myself isn't just grounded in whether I fail or not. And so where does that come from? And I think that's the touch point to maybe start to reflect some on how spirituality does or can play into life as we live it, life as we experience it.
Yeah, I think that when I think about spirituality, I just think about, and again, maybe it's important to differentiate religion from spirituality.
I think it is. We can touch on that real quick and come back to it as often as folks need us to. I think what religion does, whatever religion it is, it takes spirituality, which if we flesh that out, becomes an attempt to relate to this something bigger, this something else. It's an attempt to articulate what it is, and then to either record experiences of feeling it, to get into metacognition, to kind of think through what I was thinking and try to put that down into some kind of rational form. Not just what it is, but how to relate to it. Depending on the religion, that could mean how to make it happy, how to please it, but how to relate to it. And what religion then does is it fixes those things and says, this is it. Whereas spirituality doesn't necessarily in and of itself feel the need to ever make concrete the abstract experience or the abstract idea. Religion, I think, wants to make it a structure. It kind of goes back to, well, it's probably not fair to say it goes back to outcomes, but it is fair, I think, to say it goes back to this control idea of I need to get this thing in a box that I can explain, that I can understand. And I think religion tends to stop there. Either you're going to understand this and agree to it, or you're not. And then, depending on the religion, that may bode well or well or bode poorly for you. But I think that religion, by and large, just fixes certain concepts, certain experiences people have had with regard to spirituality.
Yeah, I look at the way I keep things simple in my head is I think about religion as actions,
mm-hmm.
and I think about spirituality as a connection.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that when I think about spirituality, I think about this connection that you feel to something other than yourself.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be, I don't think that it has to be a man or a woman in the sky that's sort of granting wishes.
No.
But just, I think spirituality is this sort of connection that you feel to other people and other living things around you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And this sort of awareness and connection that you feel,
yeah,
with yourself. You know what I'm saying? And I think that, and that's where I think it's interesting to at some point explore, is there a connection between these three pillars that we've identified? This yeah. idea of organic thought and free thinking, this idea of consciousness and spirituality, and most importantly, how is your level of consciousness or your level of awareness about yeah. yourself and about the world, how is that level of awareness, how is that awareness connected to your level of spirituality? And again, I think it's really important for people to understand when we say spirituality, that doesn't necessarily mean we're talking about Jesus.
No, not necessarily.
It can be, but yeah. I'm saying spirituality is just, do I feel a connection to
yeah.
something other than myself?
Right, right.
Do I feel a connection to other living things and yeah. other people, other living beings, other living things around me? I
right.
think that, and it'll be interesting to explore how that level of connection, well, the connection or lack thereof that you have, and then if you do, how developed that, can you develop that connection? How developed and evolved that connection is?
Yeah.
How it informs your level of consciousness, as well as how it informs other things in other areas of our lives.
Well, I think when you ask the question, can I develop this feeling of connection? I think that is when you talk about religion being action. I think that's where it begins to happen. I think action in religion is born out of one of two things. It's either an attempt through action to nurture or to arrive at an experience of that other, or it is a testimony to the fact that someone experienced something that worked, and so let's keep that. Let's codify that. Let's write that down. Let's make that the thing we always do.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so that begins to become a structured way of trying to engage with what spirituality already senses.
Yeah,
and once it's structured, that's a religion. And then what people do with religion becomes a whole different thing, because often what we do with religion is that's when we shift to say, not only is this a way to engage, but we tend to want to say, this is the way. This is it. Even though if you take the time to look across religions, by and large, you see in the best expressions of any given religion, because every religion has multiple expressions, in the best expressions, again, my opinion, what you see there is a value of life, and every space in which it occurs, and in every way that life manifests itself.
Yeah.
They acknowledge the fact that all of this is and should be interrelated and connected. You mentioned Jesus earlier, which probably get somebody to respond just because you said his name. The religion, for example, that Jesus practices, you know, Jesus isn't a Christian. This Christianity follows him. But the religion he practices, although it is at its root out of whatever Judaism would have been called then, the root of how he practices it is always calling you back to a recognition of relationship with the divine, if you want to call it the divine, with one another. He never separates relationship with the divine from relationship with the person right next to you.
Yeah.
That you can't divorce those from one another.
Yeah.
And so... yeah, but then it's a good example, because you take everything that Jesus says and teaches about the way to be in relationship, and you take that and make it this concrete set thing, and you make a statue of him, and you turn it into a thing that you have to have allegiance to.
Gotcha.
Or that you just do the actions of.
Yeah.
And you can really easily lose sight of what the drive was.
Yeah.
And that we don't have to make this about Jesus uniquely, but what you see there in that life, if you study the life, to me, is someone who is trying to practice and teach others to practice, ultimately, what relationship is supposed to be with the divine, if you want to call it that. Keelan and I have talked about the idea of operating on the same wavelength, the same rhythm, the same flow as what the divine or the other or the universe is doing. In this show, we don't want to box in any particular way of language that religion would require, because we're trying to keep the idea of free thought open, with the confidence that regardless of how we're working it through, once you get to spirituality and free thought and consciousness together, it always brings back the inescapable reality of the fact that we're in relationship to each other. And either we're going to navigate that well or navigate that. So that's been a lot. And we want to tie things off here for today, to give folks a chance to hear what we've been introducing as far as looking at life and life experiences from the perspective of these three pillars, you know, free organic thought, consciousness, spirituality/religion. And give you a chance to hear and process this, maybe give some response. We'll come back next week and pick up the conversation. But we appreciate your time. We appreciate you listening. And we will appreciate the ways that you will engage with us in the future in the conversation. Again, we've not arrived at universal truth today. We're just two folks trying to talk it through. So we look forward to being with you next time.
Again, thank you so much for everyone who took the time out to listen. As I always say, you could have been anywhere, but you was here with us today, at least for a little while. For those that would like to participate, or you have comments, suggestions, or ideas, you can contact us. You can email us at synergykhgh@gmail.com. That's synergykhgh@gmail.com. synergykhgh@gmail.com. Any suggestions for panels, book writers, ideas, suggestions? If you'd like to be a part of the show, you have an interesting perspective on consciousness, on self-awareness, or whatever, by all means, please email us or contact us, and one of us will get back to you, and we will talk about it, and we will rock and roll. So again, we want to thank you for your time, thank you for your effort, thank you for your energy, and again, to be clear, I always want to give the disclaimer. None of the views, perspectives, ideas that you hear on this podcast or on this show are supported by Marshall University, are supported by any of its employees, any of its sponsors, or any of its affiliates in any way, shape, form, or fashion. None of the perspectives, ideas, or concerns that you or comments that you hear on this show are supported by WMUL, by any of its employees, any of its sponsors, or any of its affiliates or volunteers in any way, shape, form, or fashion. These are the sole perspectives, ideas, and comments of myself, Keelan Henson, and Joe Hill. So again, we thank you for giving us a little bit of your time. And as we always say, peace and blessings to you.
I can sing you the storyline, and if you like my story, fine. But ain't none of the glory mine. See, my life was a lonely one, and I was dear mama's only son, with no idea what I'm going.